This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in company's profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host for the first hour, Corey Fleck, and I appreciate everybody taking some time out of their weekend and listening to our show, whether it is on the radio, on our podcast, Corlin Economics Report, or on our website, kereport.com. There's a lot of valuable commentary that comes out on a daily basis and a lot of discussion between our listeners, which I always appreciate, and I always thank everybody for what they have to contribute. In this first hour, we're going to be talking a bit about commodities, a bit about the markets, and also a bit about cryptocurrencies. It continues to be a trend and, well, a news story that's on a lot of people's minds. I'm kicking off this show with our good friend Dan Oliver. He is the founder and president of Mermican Capital, also the president of the CMRE, which is the Committee for Monetary Research and Education. And Dan, what I want to talk to you about is some commentary that came out of the recent CMRE dinner regarding cryptocurrencies. You guys had a, you could say, specialist in cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin come and explain to you actually his reason for why we could see Bitcoin at almost $4 million a Bitcoin, which I know seems crazy. But what surprised me is some of the stuff that he said really stuck with you. Can you please initially break us down on what this talk involved to the CMRE?
Yeah, so the CMRE was founded 47 years ago in opposition to the Bretton Woods system by various economic luminaries. And from time immemorial, of course, money's always been gold. And the reason it's been gold or silver is because of liquidity. It's not gold that's the magic. It's something Carl Menger wrote back in 1892 and consolidated all the theories before that, that basically what money is the substance through which people can trade their goods most cheaply. And so if you think about gold, it's readily identifiable because of its unusual density, has a very low melting point compared to other commodities. So you can divide it and reassemble it. It doesn't decay. It has a high value per unit weight, so it's easy to transport, easy to store. All these things made gold the most liquid element, and that's why monetary systems have always been around gold because of that. Now, you can increase liquidity of gold by having, for example, banknotes. The problem with gold coin is that in the olden days, people would chip off little bits of the gold coin, and so every gold coin was different, and merchants would make you weigh your gold, and that made it very illiquid. So you deposit in a bank, the bank certifies, yes, you deposit as much gold, they issue a banknote against it, and that banknote now is more liquid than the gold itself because it represents gold, it isn't the gold, and so therefore you can't clip it, you can't do various things to it. So that's, in a very brief outline, the history of money. And so along comes Bitcoin. So we had a meeting last week with some people in the business. For example, George Gilder, who's a technology writer, Lawrence White, who's some of the foremost expert in free banking, and a relatively young professor named Saif Amos from the University of Beirut, who's written a manuscript I've read on Bitcoin. And the discussion was, again, on the monetary principles of Bitcoin and its potential to disrupt the bank system and how state power might respond to that. And I think for me, what came out of the meeting was I wasn't convinced by the thesis that Bitcoin is better money than gold. We can talk about that later. But I did come out convinced that Bitcoin is a bubble and it's going to get bigger before it collapses, potentially a lot bigger. And if you think about it, that doesn't mean it's a fraud. I mean, bubbles tend to form around new technologies that are very powerful. There was a big railroad bubble in the 19th century. Railroads were amazing technologies. There was overinvestment and they collapsed. Same thing with the internet. I mean, the internet was real. The internet companies weren't real because they had no revenues and the business models were bad. But the internet itself was an amazing technology. And so there's always something at the core of a bubble interesting. And cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, really fits that bill. And in my view, what's happening now is if you think back at the internet bubble, in 94, 95. No one really knew what an internet was, except computer geeks. And even at that early stage, they started making a lot of money on these companies that had no real function or purpose. But they made such money that the big New York money started thinking, hey, we're missing out on this. And so the bubble really got going in 97, 98, when the big New York money started saying, hey, we're going to start backing some of these companies because we don't want to miss out. And that powered the market higher until finally at the top, retail world got sucked into it, and you know, you always get a blow off top as the retail world comes in. And then the whole thing collapsed, not because the technology was no good, but because the valuations made no sense. And I think where we are in the whole Bitcoin cryptocurrency bubble is, it's I hadn't really focused on how much money a lot of these computer geek developers have made. I mean, some of them made tens of millions of dollars on this thing already. And it's the same thing's happening. Hardly a day goes by without reading a story about a New York institution or a stock exchange or a private equity firm that isn't trying to get into this system because they see the amount of money being made and they want to be part of it. And that's the sophisticated money. And of course, after that stage will come the retail stage where they figure out ways to get people to put their, you know, savings into this market. And that's when it'll blow up. But I think we have a long way to go until that happens, assuming the market doesn't melt down. I mean, every bubble is not just a new technology, but that is, of course, the basis of liquidity formed by the bank system. And the Federal Reserve wasn't around the 19th century, certainly, but you still had this fractional bank system that creates funny money, and it looks for a place to go, and it can focus on property. For example, Florida in the 1920s or recently, where it can focus in on internet companies, or this time, is focusing on cryptocurrencies. So all the pattern fits of previous bubbles, and this is just our version of it. I happen to think, coming out of this meeting last week, that we're still in the early stage of this thing, and go a lot higher. I don't think I'm smart enough to time the ups and downs. I'm not sure I'm going to participate in it, because that's a little more chaotic than I analyze. But I do think that this thing can go a lot higher before it cracks.
So, Dan, again, there's still a lot of steps for cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin in general to take those steps of more mainstream acceptance. Yes, they're being written up a lot in the mainstream media, but again, from an investment standpoint, the exchanges are resisting any sort of ETFs. The governments, including China, are trying to fight back and somehow put a cap or lid on these type of movements. But from your eyes, as you mentioned, you're in New York, you're talking to these fund managers. They are starting to get involved now, aren't they?
So yeah, they all make involved. And the big institutions, don't forget, are big, which means they're clunky and they're behind the curve. They'll get these things listed. I think there was a Ethereum ETN lifted just this week in Europe. So it's not in the U.S., but it's on the Europe NASDAQ. So the point is, these will come into the mainstream. Once the big money gets involved, then the pressure, not from some computer scientist in California who has no idea how the SEC works or how the structure works, it'll be some big banker in New York or some big private equity firm that says, hey, we have this big interest in this company. It's worth a lot of money. We want to get liquidity. So they'll lean on the regulators, who are themselves, don't forget these guys, it's a revolving door. You go from the bank to the SEC and then back again. So they call their friends up and say, hey, at that point, now it's our show, so let us in. And so they'll get in once the pressure is big enough. There's no question.
Well, Dan, there's still a lot for us to touch on. And what we're going to do is record another segment that I'm going to post as a weekend special on our website that will be released shortly after the full weekend show at thekereport.com. You and I can spend some time comparing cryptocurrencies, more specifically Bitcoin, to gold and the potential that, I guess, cryptocurrencies have to disrupt the whole financial system. Again, you can understand why some people are very excited about this sector simply because, well, I have friends that bought their first Bitcoins at $30 a Bitcoin, and now looking at the profit that they have, man, there has been a lot of money made. Unfortunately, I was not on board with it initially, but there still could be a bit of room for this to run. Who knows if it will end up being just another massive bubble. But hey, everybody, check out KEReport.com for Dan and I's continued discussion on Bitcoin versus gold.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-774-3149 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-774-3149. Again, that's 800-774-3149.
Concur does what might seem impossible for your business. It makes employees happy and finance happy. How? Well, employees love automated expense reports and invoices they can submit and approve from anywhere. And finance loves that they have full visibility into employee spend. Plus, Concur integrates with leading finance systems. Concur makes the process better for everyone. Concur. Expense. Travel. Invoice. Learn more at concur.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
Oh my gosh, that's Frank Thomas.
No.
Yes, that's him. Go ahead.
Excuse me, are you Frank Thomas?
Yes, I am.
I bet you get recognized a lot.
I was a pretty good ball player.
You were?
Some people thought so.
Sorry, we recognize you from those Nugenix commercials.
Oh yeah? That's great.
So does Nugenix really work?
Oh yeah, I really can feel the difference. My workouts are better, and I feel a lot more energetic.
I wish my husband would use Nugenix.
It's so easy to get started. All you have to do is send one simple text.
Text the word PRIME44 to 42424 for a complimentary bottle of award-winning Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. Its unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, a patented key ingredient clinically researched to help a man feel stronger, leaner, more energetic, and more passionate.
And you're going to like the difference, too.
Text PRIME44 to 42424 for a complimentary bottle of Nugenix. Samples are not available in stores. Text PRIME44 to 42424.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family survival to survivalistcamps.com.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, we're going to be talking U.S. equity markets, looking at some historic data, and looking at some internal data with our good friend Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago. Dana, I first want to recap a post that you put on your blog a number of months ago that
takes the Dow industrial average back to 1900 through to 2017 and looks at the years that end in a certain number broken down by quarter and the average quarterly drawdown. And one thing that we do notice in these charts, and I will share some of these charts, they can also go to your website and find these, and it shows that Q4 of years that end in 7, so one of the years that we're in, is actually the worst performing year. This is obviously a negative sign, but this is also dealing with a lot of historic data. Can you give us just another general recap of maybe what this means or what you're trying to point out here?
Sure, Corey. We put out this chart back in July. I've seen a lot of similar-looking chart since we put it out, but I think we were the first ones to put out this data about years ending in 7. So we broke it down by half years, and as it turns out, the second half of years ending in 7, going back about 12 decades, so a decent sample size, the second halves of years 7 had the worst median returns and drawdowns of any half year that we looked at, and really, except for one other half year, it was really the worst half year by a long shot. So basically, since 1907, we've seen some bad stuff, either in terms of returns or just drawdowns within the half year. Basically, every decade since 1907, except for a handful, like 1927, was basically straight up leading into that 29 bubble. And then even 2007, which everyone remembers as the top, didn't see a terrible return. And we saw basically just a 10% drawdown, which now seems big, but it's actually less than the average. But we didn't see bad returns, but it did mark a cyclical market top, of course. So as everyone knows, with basically every stock index in the U.S. market breaking out to new highs over the last month or so, obviously the market has been able to evade this year 7 curse, this second half of year 7 curse. So coming in the fourth quarter, we took a new look at it and discovered that, you know, basically the second halves, most of the bad stuff occurring in the second half of 7 years happened in the fourth quarter. So for example, the average return for the second half of year 7 is about minus 8%, but minus 7.3% of that happened in the fourth quarter. So we're seeing most of that bad stuff that we've consistently seen in years ending with 7 in the back half of those years happen in the fourth quarter of those years. So perhaps a statistical anomaly. If you look at the charts we'll put out, the performance of this quarter is so much worse than almost any other quarter. It may be an anomaly, but it's hard to believe that there isn't something to it, something to this kind of a cycle that has consistently put up that type of performance. But again, the more important issue is what is going on in the market right now in terms of the internal structure and the price structure. And that would seem to suggest that the market may, like it did in the third quarter, may escape any damage that's too serious here in the fourth quarter. We'll see.
Now let's talk about some of these internals, because you mentioned to me off mic that these internals are actually looking quite strong, which is different than what happened in July when you and I chatted, when we saw the market again continue to break out to new all-time highs, but the internals were weak. This time, breaking to new all-time highs with strong internals, that gives you the confidence to think that this could continue.
That's right. When we talked in July, back at the end of July, we saw, you know, a barrage of breakouts in the large cap averages that had been making higher highs all year, but finally we saw small caps and mid caps and those broader type of averages kind of eke into new high territory. But as you mentioned, we weren't seeing the type of internal support, the internal strength in terms of participation in the breakout. So we were suspect of the breakout at the time, and indeed it failed immediately. And things like the NYSE advanced decline line was failing to move to new highs. the Value Line Geometric Composite, which tracks the performance of the median stock in the U.S. market, that failed to move to a convincing new high. So we had some internal or breadth-related red flags involving that breakout in, quote-unquote, breakout in July. This time around, over the last month, it's been a vastly different story. We've seen terrific participation across the board from micro caps all the way up to large caps. Even in this, in the Value Line Geometric Average, we saw a decisive breakout to new all-time highs, breaking multiple peaks going back to 1998 even. And we're seeing, you know, all the advanced decline lines moving to decisive new highs. So we're seeing much better participation in terms of this latest breakout, which bodes well for the intermediate term, you know, the next several months. We are a bit extended in the short term here. And, of course, in the longer term, as we've talked about, we have major concerns about the sustainability of this type of a breakout. But at least in the over the next intermediate term, next several months, things still look constructive for a resumption in this rally after any pause or digestion here.
Does this go hand-in-hand with the low volatility and relatively low volume? It's not crashing in terms of volume. The volume's still, for the most part, there, but we're not seeing any sort of spikes in either volume or volatility.
Well, in terms of volume and volatility, October is usually when we see a peak in volatility, a peak in volume, and we're seeing the opposite. As you mentioned, volatility remains extremely depressed. Volume for October is about as low as we've ever seen it on a relative basis. So that's the nature of the market that we're in right now, where we've, you know, been drifting higher in the broader averages for the last 2 months, day after day, and in the large caps basically all year. So when we've gone almost a year without even a 3% pullback in the S&P 500, people are going to get pretty comfortable, pretty complacent. So as long as that continues, look for, you know, low volume, low volatility, as people have no reason to be nervous as far as they know. So we'll see. I'm sure we'll have a couple shocks along the way before the culmination of this rally.
Okay. You and I have actually talked about some of the background indicators that should be showing some weakness. But again, the fact of the matter is, these markets are continuing to move up on a lot of optimism and still a lot of complacency.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com. Attention type 2 diabetics. If you or a loved one has taken Invokana, Invokamet, or Invokamet XR or other inhibitors for type 2 diabetes and suffered amputation of the toes, feet, or legs, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA has warned that Invokana, Invokamet, or Invokamet XR and other inhibitors for type 2 diabetes cause an increased role in amputations of the toes, feet, and legs. If you or a loved one has taken Invokana, Invokamet, or Invokamet XR or other inhibitors years for type 2 diabetes and suffered amputation of the toes, feet, or legs, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-475-7607. That's 800-475-7607. Again, 800-475-7607. Call now. This is an advertisement paid non-attorney spokesperson. www.injuryhelpdesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Cal Bend Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing on in the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. Happy to report that I have on the line with me Peter Brandt. He has been on the show a number of times. He's unfortunately had a very busy summer, so we haven't had a chance to reconnect, but hey, this is our opportunity here, Peter. So Peter is the founder of a proprietary trading firm, and I think a lot of people that have followed technical trading know who Peter is. So, Peter, let's get just a general recap of what we're seeing in a couple of the markets that we like to watch on the KE Report. Let's start off with gold. As we're recording this, gold is just above 1300. Again, it's trading very much in this range that, well, you can say it put in 2016. Put in some higher lows, but still hasn't managed to break out to higher highs in terms of that run in 2016. What are your comments on the gold sector right now?
Good to be with you again, Corey, after a few months. Just about every trader I talk to that's kind of in my peer group are all pretty much gung-ho bulls on gold. And while I am as well, if I look at it from a 10-year or longer time frame, I just don't get the bull case right now. I'm struggling with the idea that I should be long gold right now. I'm flat. I have been thinking that we'd take a peek at under $1,200 again before gold could perhaps seriously be considered for me to be long in. If it doesn't get back there, I'll probably miss the boat. But I just think it's too early. It's too early from a chart standpoint for gold to really get up and go. And I've been in the back of my head thinking that the second quarter of 2018 would be a time to buy gold if gold at the time is down around the 1200 level. But I do not quite understand why gold right now is above 1300, and I certainly cannot understand really the immediate bull case in gold. So I'm neutral on gold, long-term bullish. Short-term, I want to be a bear, but the market's not cooperating.
Peter, can you share with us some of the comments that your network has, those ones that are bullish that have you thinking, you know what, maybe they are right, but quite frankly, I just can't get on board with that argument right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple things. It's the relative value of gold to the equity market, I think, is one. People are looking at it and saying, you know, gold is at a record cheap level in comparison to equities. You know, talking about the fact that you know, it's just kind of taken second fiddle here now to bitcoins, but at some point in time, the Bitcoin craze may wear a little bit thin, and the money from that will flow to gold. I think that's probably the general narrative that I hear from my friends who are immediately constructive on gold prices.
So again, Peter, one thing that maybe is holding you back and you're not understanding why gold is trading at the level that it is, you think it should be lower. Is that because of, again, the interest that continues to be in the U.S. equity markets and drive those higher? And again, what you just said, the interest in bitcoins and cryptocurrencies that continue to drive Bitcoin to new all-time highs?
Yeah. I mean, you know, money chases hot markets. And that's been stocks, and it's been bitcoins, and, you know, it hasn't been gold. And so I think the gold market's had a hard time attracting large inflows of hot spec money.
Interesting comments. But, Peter, let's look at what's going on in the U.S. equity markets. Again, it almost seems like day after day we're seeing the S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ all reach new all-time highs, and the VIX continues to almost maintain under 10 on the volatility index. What is your assessment of the health and maybe the continued moves of these U.S. equity markets?
Oh, I mean, higher. I'm constructive on equity markets. I'm long the equity markets globally. I think what the equity market is possibly anticipating is, you know, cutting of corporate tax rates in the U.S., the possibility that tax law may make it a little more friendly for some of the money being held offshore by U.S. corporations to come on back into this country, and all of a sudden we could have your corporate America awash in earnings and in money. I think that's what's driving U.S. equities, and of course in Europe you've still got QE going on, and I think there's starting to be some money that's really taking a look again at Asia and seeing the growth potential in Asia. You know, one of the markets that I'm very constructive in is Taiwan. I'm long Taiwan. Taiwan, as we speak today, is making new all-time record highs. And so I just don't see any signs of a top yet in the equity market. We just have not been able to correct it all. So I'm constructive in Taiwan, I'm constructive in the U.S., I'm constructive selectively in Europe, and I'm constructive in India.
So are you concerned at all about, yes, we still have some pretty easy money policies in some other central banks and countries around the world, but are you concerned about this general narrative change towards slightly tighter monetary policies out of the Fed, out of the ECB, those main central banks?
No, because I think the world has become used to the fact that interest rates should be zero or minus. You know, you look throughout history, there's been healthy stock markets throughout history with interest rates much higher. You know, I think you make the argument that, you know, interest rates should go back historically to some levels where it's been at. The idea that we have T-bill rates under 1%, that Switzerland has minus 70 basis point interest rates, anyone holding Swiss francs up to pay for the privilege of doing it, you know, I just think these low interest rates are way overdone for way too long, and the fact that we could have some upticks in yields, I don't think is at all a deterrent to higher equity prices.
Interesting. Okay, now, Peter, a quick comment on the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar has seen a little bit of a rebound from, well, really when it broke down at the beginning of September. What's your assessment of the dollar? Continued weakness or maybe a bit of a rebound?
No, quite constructive on the U.S. dollar. I think the U.S. dollar is really one of the markets that has my most attention right now. If you look at the U.S. dollar, the commitment of traders, commercials have just about their largest long position in U.S. dollars in the history of the U.S. dollar contract. Speculators are short. I personally do not like being aligned with speculators against commercials. And the last time that we had the current COT, commitment of traders profile, in the U.S. dollar was back in mid-2014, just before the U.S. dollar had a run from 80 to over 100. So I think we could see a substantial, perhaps 5 to 10% advance in the U.S. dollar from current levels. I think that, you know, we have in place what we need to have in place to really have kind of a bear squeeze in the dollar and a run-up. It's one of my favorite markets right now.
Interesting, Peter. You're not the first one to point out that commitment of traders report and say that, you know what, we could very well see a nice rebound in the dollar. I've been expecting it now, but in all fairness, it's taken a lot longer than I thought it would. So, again, who knows? Maybe this will take time, but interesting to hear your updated comments, and great to have you back on the show. So we'll be chatting again here soon, Peter, and have a great weekend. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Corey. You too.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
North Korea openly threatens the U.S. and launches a new missile every other week. Their warhead of choice? Electromagnetic pulse. Such an event would cripple the U.S. power grid for years and leave millions in the dark. Are you ready? You can be with a Solark EMP-hardened solar generator. Solark works day in and day out to keep your essentials protected. You can have peace of mind knowing your power will be there when you most need it. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to see EMP testing. That's PortableSolarLLC.com. Energy insurance for your family.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutral. Neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.
Dr. Carolyn Dean wants you to have a free chapter of her new book, The Magnesium Miracle Second Edition, and it's available at magmiracle.com. In your free chapter, Dr. Carolyn Dean explains how magnesium is essential to support the structure and function and overall health of your body. Your free chapter is your guide to learn how to support your heart, bone, metabolic, lung, and mental health with this powerful mineral. The Magnesium Miracle Second Edition is available on Amazon, but right now get a free chapter at magmiracle.com, spelled M-A-G, miracle.com.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-765-9681 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-765-9681. Again, that's 800-765-9681.
Welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition. I'm joined by our good friend Chris Martinson, co-founder, co-editor of PeakProsperity.com. And Chris, in this segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about inflation. I've been discussing inflation quite a bit, actually, ever since Yellen came out and admitted that she just doesn't understand why inflation is so low. We'll get more into her comments later, but let's talk about some of the recent data we saw out. This core CPI still below the Fed mandate, but again, the Fed saying they don't really care what it's going to show. They're going about their quantitative tightening. First of all, though, Chris, you did a video update for your subscribers discussing inflation. What's the general theme that you're focusing on?
Well, my view, Corey, is that inflation is one of my favorite topics because it affects all of us, is that the way they gather the numbers is just so distorted at this point in time that they don't bear any resemblance to reality. The Fed is driving a ship, in essence, and one of the key gauges is following, like its compass is broken. And, you know, so for an example of that, you know, people will hear the data that says, wow, inflation is below the Fed mandate. It's too low. It's worryingly low. It's too low in Europe. And for the average person whose pay isn't going up, there's nothing wrong with prices not rising. And when you dig into how they gather the data, you can easily find examples where any reasonable person would say, well, that's just stupid. That doesn't mirror my experience at all.
Which I think a lot of people are seeing that on the bottom line in terms of housing costs, rent costs, hey, even cell phone costs. I've talked about that before. All of these on a consumer basis seem to be going up. But again, the Fed is saying we're not seeing any inflation. So there is this big disconnect, isn't there?
Well, there is. And so let me give one example. You know, there's a number of purchases that are fairly large in people's lives, and automobiles is one of them. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, or BLS, they gather the data. And if you go over to their website, they will happily tell you that they've baselined automobiles to 1980, and they said, we're going to call that 100. And in 1997, cars had gone from 100 all the way up to a price of 145.4, you know, meaning 45.4% more expensive than they were in 1980. And then you carry forward 20 full years and you're into the year 2017 and you discover that the BLS says cars now cost 145.7, not 0.4, but 0.7. That's a 0.2% increase, as if cars you know, used to cost $10,000 in 1997, and they're saying, according to the BLS, they now cost $10,020. But we have this thing called the internet. You can wander over and discover the cost of living in 1997. And there I've discovered that an average new car, Corey, in 1997 cost $16,900. And today, the average new car costs $34,300. That's 102% increase, not 0.2%. Cars cost more than twice as much as they did in 1997. But according to the U.S. government, they actually cost exactly the same. So you, as somebody who has this thing called a wallet or a pocketbook or a checkbook or however you pay for things, you will discover cars cost twice as much as they used to. But according to the government, they only cost 0.2%. Worrying number. That's the worrying inflation they're talking about. It's non-existent. Where is it? Well, it's in the bad numbers y'all are putting out.
Yeah, unfortunately, you are correct on that one. But again, a lot of this does come down to, I think, the central banks. Everyone's looking at the central banks because they did put such a target out there, the Fed saying they want 2% inflation. And, well, now, as I said on the onset, they're ignoring the inflation numbers because Yellen said she's just confused by them. But we also had Draghi come out and say that he thinks negative rates at the ECB have been a success. But again, they're not seeing sustained inflation to the target that they want. So he's going to potentially stick with low rates. There just seems to be a disconnect between what we're hearing from the central banks and what they're expecting in terms of inflation.
Well, absolutely. So let's back up a second. Why would a central bank want inflation? Nobody else does, right? You and I don't want our money to be constantly eroding. And the reason central banks want inflation is because it allows the credit machine to continue going. And under an inflationary environment, banks make better profits. Let's be clear. The central banks are not here to make your experience better. They're here to make sure that bank profitability is preserved, and banks do better under an inflationary than a deflationary environment. And it was really telling, mentioning Draghi again, that he said, you know, that one of the ways that he justified keeping these negative interest rate policies was by saying that, hey, contrary to what critics suggested, these policies haven't hurt bank profitability. That was his first statement out of his mouth. And I'm like, Draghi, I've been a huge critic of these things, but I wasn't at all concerned about bank profitability. I wasn't even remotely my concern. My concern is negative interest rates drive prices up for average people. It stokes massive bubbles. There has been enormous inflation. They're just looking in the wrong spot. But you can see it in property values. You can see it in the stock market. You can see it in bond markets. There's plenty of inflation, but it's not where they're choosing to look. And it's kind of like a person who doesn't want to find out something about themselves, say that they're overweight, saying, I checked my weight everywhere, but I didn't look in a mirror or step on a scale. So seems to be okay.
Now, what about what data we are seeing? Because we are starting to see a bit of an uptick in some of, I know, the inflation data that we're saying is silly, how they're actually recording it and measuring it, but we are starting to see a general uptick in inflation, which is similar to what we entered the year seeing. Then we had that lull in the middle of the year. Do you think this is a sustained trend, that the inflation on a consumer level might actually start to creep into the way that the central banks measure it?
Well, so again, we have to define something. The way the central banks are measuring inflation is wrong. They're measuring the tail, not the dog. And so what I mean by that is that they're looking at prices. Now, prices are a symptom of inflation potentially, right? Meaning that inflation happens when you have lots of creation of money. You have more creation of money than there are goods and services. So more money is out there chasing stuff. By definition, that means we're creating more money. It means we're making more loans. That's what they're after. To say that gasoline prices, which are higher now than they were a year ago, is an inflationary dynamic is not true. There's another way prices go up, and that's due to simple supply and demand characteristics. So if you have cost push inflate price rises, like because oil becomes, you know, more scarce and it goes up in price, that's not really what the Fed's after. So they're really looking at a measure, which is rising prices, which is not actually what they're after. What they really want is they want the wage price lending spiral to kick back in like it did in the 70s, because that's how you get out from too much debt, and they're really concerned how we're going to get out from under all this debt. Inflation is their answer, and they are confused. They don't understand why they're not getting it, but it's because, again, they're looking in the wrong spots, trying the wrong things.
What do you think needs to happen for the central banks to actually get the inflation that you're looking for, or is that just a pipe dream?
Well, I mean, the easiest thing they could have done was to not hand all the money to the markets, that is to the 0.1%. They shouldn't have given it to speculators, private equity funds, big banks. If they wanted inflation, they should have put it to Main Street. And so money for Main Street is a way that this could be accomplished. We're seeing plenty of inflation in countries that are trying exactly that. You know, we are seeing that in Venezuela at this point in time. You're starting to see that in Brazil. We're going to see plenty of it, I think, in Algeria, which just started a massive printing program because their oil revenues had fallen. So we will see that happen, but that's what you need to do. You need to give the money to the people who are going to buy the things that you want to see going up in price. That's the mechanism.
But again, do we even want inflation? From a consumer, from an investor standpoint, is inflation good?
No, it's not. It's absolutely not. I would prefer falling prices. I like to buy things for cheaper. I don't know about you, but
me
that's
too.
Why. Yeah, I like putting money in the bank and knowing that it's still going to be worth something when I need it in the future. To subject people to an inflation regime means you have to keep scrambling. You got to keep your money in the market. You got to keep it moving. You got to keep worrying about it. It's a lot of stress. Remember, there were whole periods of history under the gold standard where you could have buried $1,000 in the backyard and dug it up literally 150 years later, and it would have had exactly the same purchasing power as it had 150 years earlier. Now, that's a different sort of environment to live under. You can actually do things like generational estate planning and thinking about what assets will be worth in the future because you have a reference point. It's solid. The Fed has said we don't want solid reference points. We'd rather have this be all just chaotic.
Which, unfortunately, seems to be the system that we're in. And that's the biggest problem with this system is that with all the debt out there, the central banks and banks in general need inflation to be around so that them in general can actually pay off these debts. But we're not seeing, well, we are seeing, unfortunately, from a consumer standpoint, the inflation, but not in the way that the central banks want to. Maybe that is the biggest problem that we're going to see in the long run here. But overall, Chris, I guess you would agree with me that the way the central banks and the government are measuring inflation is incorrect, and the consumer is the one getting hurt the most right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the case, and unfortunately, we're out of time right now, Chris, but hey, you have a great weekend, and I appreciate you joining us on this weekend show.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.